Hey, sweet people, how's it going? Welcome to a new episode of the Sweet Spot Podcast, where we explore creativity, entrepreneurship, and how to build a successful brand. I'm your host, Mark Zusen. Today, I'm joined by fashion entrepreneur and brand strategist, Miller McCoy. Miller is the founder and CEO of Limitless Manufacturing Group, a Los Angeles-based agency specializing in brand incubation, product development, and high-growth merchandise strategies. Miller's journey began in Iowa, where he launched his first clothing brand at the age of just 15. And despite facing chronic pain from a young age, he transformed his passion for fashion into a thriving business, Human Clothing, and later established Limitless Manufacturing Group. His vision, his approach and business has made him today one of the go-to streetwear designers for LA artists, musicians, and creatives. And in this episode, we delve into Miller's early experiences as a magician and a designer and how they shaped his entrepreneurial spirit, the challenges he faced and overcame in building his brands, insights into the fashion industry and brand development, and his approach to storytelling through fashion. So join us as we uncover the sweet spot that drives Miller McCoy's success and creativity.
Welcome to The Sweet Side. This is The Sweet Spot Podcast with Mark Zeus, investigating entrepreneurship, purpose, and the creative life.
Miller, welcome to The Sweet Side. Welcome to The Sweet Spot Podcast. So nice to have you here.
Wonderful to be here, Mark. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course, it's a pleasure. You know what, a man of your profession and interests, there's only one question I can start with. You have a fabulous outfit on today. Can you tell me why you choose it and what it is?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm below here. I'm just wearing a plain, simple black t-shirt. Nothing fancy, but it's kind of been my style. I wear a lot of black tees, wear a lot of white tees. And then again, on top, I'm wearing a plain, just it's kind of like a cashmere, heathered cashmere zip-up sweater. Nice. This one's from the brand Kith, which is a nice brand. But a lot of times I used to dress very, if you're familiar with streetwear, right? I used to wear a lot of big, loud graphics, a lot of ripped up, distressed sort of garments. But throughout the years, I've kind of had to transition, and you find your style, right? Time goes on and the seasons in your life change and everything like that. And this is more so the style now. I wear a lot of more basics, but I like to think of everything as being like a little bit higher on the quality or higher on the form fitting, all that sort of stuff. So like on this jacket, you know, it's a silk lined on the inside. So it's very smooth and nice.
Nice. Like it. Very cool.
The t-shirt's got a good feel to it. And it's professional, casual, and, allows me to do everything and can interact anywhere. So
always dressed for the occasion. You know, that's what, it's funny you started with your shirt, because every once in a while, driven by pop culture, like Netflix series or something else, certain fashion items get really into the eye of the public. Like I recall there was this Succession, and it was like about this super rich family, and they had like no label clothing on all the time. But everyone was researching, what's the exact clothing? I want to dress rich and stuff like that. Yeah. And talking of t-shirts, I just remembered this fantastic series, The Bear, about this cook, and he always wears his chef whites, and he wears like the perfect white t-shirt. And there was this whole thing on the internet, like blogs and blogs and podcasts and shows about the perfect white plain t-shirt. So do you tell us which brand you're wearing?
Yeah, for the t-shirts, I wear the brand True Classic.
Ooh, it sounds like a classic.
It sounds like a classic is right. Yeah, the I like them. I think probably a year and a half ago, I ended up actually, no, it's probably about 2 years ago. Easter, 2 years ago. And it's funny that
we're recording around Easter. Yeah.
Today. Yeah. I was back home with my family And I ended up getting a true classic, just white t-shirt, and I really liked the way that it had felt and everything. And since then, they've kind of been my go-to. I buy the three pack, every couple of months, and just wear through them, and then go get the next one. And
Awesome.
I think on that show Succession, I think a lot of the people there, they were wearing the brand called Loro Piana. Loro Piana is it's a European brand, and they specialize in using vicuña, which is a very high-end wool like material. It's like a it's a lot nicer, but it's similar to like an alpaca.
Awesome.
And they the specialty thing about Loro Piana is all of their garments, they're only made with the baby vicuña. So the baby vicuña, once it gets to, I don't know the exact age, right? But it has the belly will the belly fur extends about 6 to 8 inches, and they'll cut the 6 to 8 inches from all of the vicuña. And they'll collect that fur from hundreds and hundreds of vicuña, and they make their wool garments only using that baby vicuña bottom belly fur. So it's very, very meticulous, premium luxury, and their coats will sell for the price of a house,
I
right?
can imagine.
Thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, thousands and thousands. But that's a very incredible brand, and they're very simplistic with their style.
I
Nothing
like that.
loud, no big graphics, barely any logo hits, if ever.
You know what? No matter if you wear that kind of fashion or if you're into that and if you can afford it, I really appreciate if people go all in what they're doing creatively, also from their craft and on the creative side. I mean, how long does it take to find freaking underbelly vicuña wool to be the perfect match for the coat you have envisioned, right? So that's just commitment to your creative vision. I really like that. I really enjoy that.
Spot on, Mark. Spot on. Being able to dive headfirst into something like that is not an easy task, and it's not an easy feat. And then, you have to be you have to find all the vicuña farmers because they're willing to do it, and
100%.
at that point it's like you probably need a few dozen vicuñas just to make one long coat. And so it's exactly.
Commitment, commitment.
Commitment. That's
You know
right.
what? Before we dive right into your companies and your styles, I want to, like in a classic story, I want to start at the beginning. So you just talked about Iowa, where you come from, and the headline I wrote when I researched what you do and what you did before is from magic to fashion, because that resonated with me. You began as a magician in Iowa and you transitioned into fashion design and style. And you know, you share that passion with many creatives. Just this morning, I heard a podcast interview with Jeff Goldblum, who also dabbled in magic when he was young. So
No
you
way.
have that in common. Yeah. And I hear it again and again and again. This looking for, I want to hear your story, but looking for the stage and this magic and this reveal and the whole thing that goes along with it. So, long story short, you perform magic, and how did that influence your sense of creativity and design?
Absolutely, Mark. Well, good digging. Yes, I haven't done magic in a little while, but it was my, lack of a better term, it was my first true love and passion, right? I have chronic pain and chronic nausea, and it forced me to miss a lot of school and activities. I've had it since birth, right? So I wasn't able to do kind of the my childhood was impacted slightly from it, right? I was bedridden a lot of times. I was sick a lot of times. Couldn't always participate in the normal kid things, right? And so I don't know the exact, I think I was probably watching a YouTube video or a TV show or something, and I was seeing a magician. I go, oh, that's really cool. And They were just doing like sleight of hand stuff with a deck of cards or a coin or whatever it was. And the more I thought about it, I was like, I can do that, right? And I even if I'm sick, right? Like it doesn't take a whole lot of like it takes a lot of mental bandwidth, but not a whole lot of physical, right? I don't have to be up running around and doing all this sort of stuff. And I used to love sports. I still do love sports, Mark. And I had to miss a lot of those when I was a kid. And I've always been a very hands-on learner. I've always been obsessed with learning. And just like under, I'm a huge history buff as well. And right. And so these sort of things were just really fascinating to me. And I was really, a lot of my education growing up was also kind of like YouTube University, right?
Sure.
I had to miss a lot of school. And so I would just, but I was still wanted to learn and I still wanted to do things. And so I'd learn a lot through YouTube. I'd watch a lot of videos. I'd learn history, watch the History Channel, regardless if their history that they're telling on the History Channel is good or not, right? But that's what I was into. And around the age of about 9 years old or so, actually, this is, I was, I, when I was nine, I came and did a trip with my family into Los Angeles. There was, before I was born, my mom and dad lived in Los Angeles. And they wanted to take our family and show us their friends and their original house that they had together and,
Nice.
show us all of that sort of stuff. So he did that. And coming out into Los Angeles, there's a place here called the Magic Castle, which is a bit of a, it's kind of a prestigious, if you know, sort of club, right? And the art of close-up magic is called prestidigitation. So it's a prestidigitation club, right? And they had a friend, I believe his name is Patrick, and Patrick was a magician who was also an he had a like a residency or he had a membership or whatever at the Magic Castle. So we were we did a trip out here and we went to the Magic Castle, and on a Sunday they do a brunch where you come and eat and you go experience. There's like three or four different rooms that you go into, and there's like special magicians doing, this one's card magic, this one's mini illusions, this one's mentalism, right? All this sort of stuff. And I'm waiting in line for the door to open, and there's probably another 30, 40 people there. And there are some young magicians that are working at the Magic Castle that are standing in front of the line, and they're selling like magic kits, right? And one of the magic kits that they are selling, it's the actual trick is called D lights, and they're selling these D lights, which are basically these, right? If I went like this, my thumb would start to glow, right? It would like
Okay.
light up a color, and so they're doing this thing and they're playing catch with this color light, and you
Yep.
don't see anything. It just looks like there's a light, right? And I was blown away by it. I thought it was the funniest thing ever. And they're selling the kit so that
Yeah.
way you do it yourself. Anyway, I convinced, I'm begging my mom and stuff. Oh, can I get this? Can I
You
get
need
this?
this. Yeah.
I need this. Yeah. She ends up, getting swayed and yes, okay, whatever. Let's get it, right? So I purchase it. I'm sitting there for a little bit. I figure out, I kind of figure it out. And then I think we go into that show, we enjoy that show, and then we come out and we're going into the next show. So now we're waiting in line. But this time I had the lights, right? I had the D lights, and I, was keeping myself busy. So I end up kind of stepping out of the line and doing what those other junior magicians were doing.
Amazing.
And
Wow.
I'm sitting there with the lights, right? Just playing catch with them. I'm putting it in this ear, pulling it out of this ear, putting it in my nose, pulling it out of my mouth. Then all of a sudden, I swallow one and I pretend, I
Nice.
pull it out of my butt
Yeah.
and I put the light up and the crowd roars. Everybody
Nicely.
standing in line just starts dying of laughter.
Yeah, okay.
My dad,
That's
his
the, yeah.
face instantly goes, no, don't do that. But I loved the reaction I received from the
Of course.
audience. And so ever since that moment, that's when I knew I could do some sort of performance. I could do some sort of magic. And that was kind of that led into the renaissance of me finding myself in a magic career. So from about the age of 9 to 12, I started doing it just like at home, in bed. It was something I could do if I was sick or if I was healthy or whatever was going on. It didn't matter the situation. If I had a deck of cards or if I had some coins or silks or anything, right? I could perform some magic, right? Even a pin. I could, whatever it is, I can do some manipulation, some sleight of hand, and I can make something happen. And so around that time, and being a sick kid that it has to miss out on a lot of other things in life, you end up finding yourself having a lot of time on your hands. And so I began really going hard with magic every day. I was waking up and going to sleep with decks of cards in my hand and magic books on my chest and YouTube videos of magicians playing and whatnot. And I began to actually get fairly decent and good at it. And around the age of 12, I started doing like local birthday parties and little events and stuff like that. And then from about the age of 12 to 15, maybe like 12 and a half to 15, after I've done the first few birthday parties, I was like, oh, there's, I can, I know how to put on a show. I've got a set list. I know a script. I know how to command the audience. I know all these things now. And so I actually ended up kind of elevating my magic career, and I was doing corporate shows. I was traveling around the Midwest and even to like Vegas and New York and California performing magic. So it was a wild experience, and I had the opportunity to get kind of like mentored or trained by a famous magician named Jeff McBride. In the common world, he's really not he's no David Copperfield in the common world, right? But in the magic world, Jeff McBride and Eugene Berger, and those were the two main ones, they're very prestigious magicians. Jeff holds lots of like Guinness World Records in the magic world and all this sort of stuff. So I had the opportunity to actually go to Vegas a few times and spend a few weeks out there and actually learn side by side with them. Jeff in his house, he's got a stage, and he's got all these masks up on the wall, and he's like, pretend those are all the people. Let's work on the sets. Let's work on the tricks, right? Let's learn all things. So I got to do that a few times, and it was a phenomenal experience. And I was able to take all those learnings, and I would do like competitions and events and stuff like that, and I would place pretty well in some of these events and competitions, and just really started diving headfirst into the magic world. And around that age of 15, a lot of my health complications started to brew into larger complications, right? People with chronic pain, a lot of times they end up having a lot of mental health issues as well, right? The two kind of go hand in hand. And around that age is when a lot of that sort of stuff started kicking in for me. I used to always be the happiest go lucky kid. I would throw up or I'd get sick, but I'd come out with a big smile on my face and say, what's for dessert? Right? Like, no big deal. But around that age of 15 is really when a lot of the things started to kind of shift in my life, where that wasn't necessarily the case. And I was tired of feeling the way I was feeling. And I didn't like that. And so there were just some more health complications that came, and I had to start canceling shows, and I couldn't, the at that point in time, I didn't have good coping mechanisms for the health issues. And so I didn't know how to regulate and deal with I could go to sleep one day feeling fine, but the next morning I would wake up and I would feel horrible. And if I had a show booked for that day or if an event was booked for that day, there was nothing, I didn't know how to deal with that properly. So I began kind of having a bit of a fallout between myself and the magic community and the people that were supporting me with the magic stuff and all that sort of stuff, because I didn't know how to cope and I was unreliable, right? And so if I, if you booked me 3 months in advance to come to your, to come to your
Sure.
corporate
Yep.
event or whatever it is, there's no, I couldn't guarantee that I would be there, right?
Right. Yeah.
So it created a lot of issues. But that's also kind of around the time where, and I think a lot of artists hit sort of a point like this, but the pain is the art. Art is pain, pain is art, right? And that's when I started kind of, I transitioned a little bit from the magic side to just a generalized art side and design side. And I was letting my pain kind of manifest itself into different art forms, if that makes sense, Mark.
100%, yeah. Well, let me I got some follow-up questions. Because what you said is very, I think is very relatable for a lot of people. Even though they might not suffer from a chronic disease or not in the extent that you had to live through it. But at the same time, it's like I think you turned, like a lot of creative people, your biggest weakness into one of your biggest strengths. Like you said, spending a lot of time alone, that's the time you learn your craft and you find this, I would say, deeper level of creativity, if that makes sense, within you. Because especially as a kid, I mean, that's where you lay the foundation for maybe a creative life or a creative career. Not to say that everyone is kind of creative, but not everyone can make a living out of it, right? And the depth of creativity varies. So, and I think some of the most creative people I know had to go through some version, some iteration of what you just told me to have that time on their hand and to spend time alone and see and come up with something. Because if you're the happy-go-lucky soccer kid, which is perfectly fine, but then you're busy socializing, doing sports, doing whatever, and there's not this focus inward and looking what you can find there. So I don't know, how do you see it today? Is it a blessing and a curse? Is it, would you
It's
trade it? Is what's your perspective on it today?
it is a blessing and a curse, but I would say it's probably the biggest blessing that I've had, and I think that blessing outweighs any of the curses it could ever bring me,
Yep.
right? I would not be who I am today if it wasn't for said curses, right? I carry in today's world, I am very healthy. I don't let these things really impact me or influence my life anymore. I have control. And it takes a very long time to get to that point. But I believe, I say that, and I still carry it with me. And I don't forget my past, but I also know I can't control my past, right? I can only control my present. And hopefully, by controlling my present, I have a better future, right? Whatever. But it is something that sticks with me day in and day out. I don't think I get asked the question occasionally, going back to those times, do you want change anything? Would you, would there be anything that you'd do different? Would you wish that, this stuff didn't happen? In reality, no, I don't, right? I am blessed and thankful for the challenges it put into my life that I had to learn how to overcome. And it, at a very young age, I kind of was forced to mature and I had to grow up a little quick, right? Now, would I ever wish it upon friends, family, enemy, hopefully my future family and kids? No, of course
Of
not.
course not, yeah.
Right. But at the same time, I do believe that, yeah, a lot of artists and creatives and even, successful business people and stuff like that, they have to go through trials and tribulations and positions in their, or seasons in their life that are challenging. And I think that the younger that you go through those, unfortunately, the faster you have to grow up and learn and just overall grow, right? And, you know, if I were, you know, if I made it from zero to today without any of those challenges, and then you present those challenges onto me today and in my life, things would be a lot different. Things would be a lot more challenging. I don't know if I would have the same results or outcomes going through it today as I did when I was a kid, right? And yes, it didn't make my childhood all sunshine and rainbows all the time, right? But also at the same time, Mark, nobody really has a sunshine and rainbows 100%. Childhood. You know, everybody has their challenges and their battles and stuff like that. And it's really finding the mindset of where you're able to look on those things and recognize that these things have happened. It is okay that they happened. Did they suck? Sure. Were they great? Sure. Who cares? Right. Like, but understanding that those challenges had happened, understanding the growth that you have learned from overcoming those challenges and applying the growth to your everyday life. And instead of being a victim to those challenges, you use it to empower you and you turn it to your superpower, right? My pain is my superpower. It's what's given me my determination, my perseverance, what's given me my grit, right? You can't hurt me, right? I've had, I felt pain, right? Like that is, you know, I know I can overcome lots of things, right? And being able to carry those as if they're, you know, accolades or badges on my chest, right?
Yeah, 100%.
It allows me to stay present in the moment and know that I can be, you know, today if I'm faced with a challenge, I can look at that challenge and know I can get over it.
Yep. 100%, man. That's what Carl Gustav Jung mentioned with his hero's journey already. And careful later, everyone. Yeah, 100%, man. So, but I mean, now we got us hooked. Now we're curious. So we left where your magic career was just going places and then you had to cancel everything. When did the shift happen? How and when did you find fashion clothing for you?
Yeah, so the shift originally happened when I was about 15. When I was younger, right, when I was really a magician, I also began learning the entrepreneurial journey throughout it, right? I was there booking my shows. I was there training myself on how to actually kind of work on building a business out of it, how to build set strips, right? What was the service or what was I providing? What value was I getting in exchange? I was getting the monetary value, right? Whatever it is. And around the age of 12, I started learning the same time that I was getting into the magic, I started learning Photoshop and I started learning HTML. I taught myself HTML through a YouTube video so I could build my first magic website, right? At MillerMcCoyEntertainment.com. I don't think it's up anymore, but
awesome.
Like a Wayback Machine, you can probably find it, right? So I learned HTML, built my first WordPress website and made my logo and made my business cards and my posters and all my visuals and graphics, right? Because I was a kid, and I'm from Iowa. We don't have this isn't a farm state, right? We have farmers and insurance there, not very little on the creative side there, especially when I was 12. But it was I kind of had to teach myself a lot of these different traits. And luckily, I was 12, so I had time on my side. I didn't have major responsibilities on my side, things of that, right? So I got to experiment and learn at a young age. And I around the age of 15, when I was kind of making this transition, I was getting way more heavy into graphic design, right? Photoshop, Illustrator, all of these sort of, I think those were really the two that I was using. And I was just getting my feelings out and making, making art on the computer. And a lot of people at that time, graphic design wasn't treated the way it is treated today, in the way that it's people didn't understand it as they didn't see it as art. They didn't see it really as it's like, okay, cool, you're making something on the computer. Okay, like what's great about and I thought what I was doing was beautiful, fabulous, and I'm spending dozens and dozens of hours crafting this design and all this sort of stuff, and I'm trying to storytell through graphics that I'm building on Photoshop, right, and all this sort of stuff. And basically, I got to the point where I was like, okay, people aren't going to fully understand this unless it's tangible, right? And I think it took me probably until I was about maybe 16, so probably about a year and a half of really going hard onto the graphic design stuff. And again, graphic design was one of those things that I could do alone in my room while I'm sick, when I'm feeling well. It didn't matter. If I had a laptop with me, a computer with me, I could do it. And I remember when I first got Adobe, I didn't have my own computer. I had to go onto my mom's computer, and I got the illegal cracked version of
Been
Adobe, and
there, I know,
probably put and viruses on our computer and whatnot, who knows? But yeah, eventually through the magic and stuff like that, I was able to get my own laptop, and I was able to kind of being able to build out my own actual suite. Ended up buying Adobe back at CS6 back in the day when it was like 400 or 500, $600 or something like that. And I was like, by the time I left Best Buy, I was like, huh. There's like all my magic money, so I really started diving big time into it. And between the ages of 16 and 17, I was about 16 and a half. That's when I really made the realization that, okay, for people to actually understand what I'm doing, I need to put this into tangible art, right? I need to make this something that's physical, something that they can put into their hands. And at that point, I had created, there's a website out there called a Redbubble. It's you upload your designs. You can put your designs on 100 different on a mug, on a pillow, a t-shirt, a hat, and then anybody can go on to your Redbubble store and purchase any of the pieces, and they'll make it and ship it. I remember I had ended up making a lot of just like designs. I would take famous figures. I would black and white the photos, threshold them, add a ton of grain to it, and then I would put a box over their eyes, and I would just put human, which
Nice.
to me, the name of my personal brand is called Human. And that's kind of where it started. And I would do a bunch of different fonts. I didn't really have a logo yet, but I just kept getting attracted to the word human, right? We're all human. We're all, and I think it stems from something that happened. I just the whole story of everything, where it's like, I'm human, I'm not perfect. Yes, I messed up some stuff on this magic side. Yes, my health is messed up. Yes, I have these, right? But everybody's got their own issues. We're all human, right? We all make mistakes. So human just continuously popped out, and that was just kind of like a word that I would live by, right? We're human.
The quintessential artistic question, what does it mean to be human, right? That's like bottom
There it
line
is.
of art. Yeah, get it.
Yeah.
Cool.
So I started taking these public figures and these iconic photos. There was one of like Gandhi. There was another one of like Pablo Escobar. There was another one of MLK. I did dozens and dozens of these, and I just put like a sensor bar over the eyes and put them through it. And I started putting them out onto the Redbubble site. And after like the first week, I started seeing, oh, purchase from Dubai, purchase from India, purchase from Australia. There wasn't many purchases, right? And I'm selling these stickers for maybe $2 or something like that,
Yeah.
right? But I, that was the first time when I saw this. I was like, oh, wow. Okay, this went from people not understanding it to now, a handful of
That
people
resonates with
that
people all
I,
of a sudden, yeah.
yeah, wait, I'm actually, even if it's a couple bucks and I've got no idea who these people are, and it's, but I'm selling this, right? And then at that point, I started kind of promoting it, right? I would now put it onto my social medias, or I'd now share it with my friends and family and all this sort of stuff. And I started doing like print-on-demand t-shirts with it, and all of that. And then I met a, I didn't even meet, I was doing just like research on like local Iowa screen print companies, and just all this sort of stuff. And about 2 miles away from the house that I grew up in, there was actually a screen print company. So I ended up getting a meeting there, and they taught me what a PO was. They taught me about the screen printing process and
Awesome.
all this sort of stuff. So I put in my first actual t-shirt order for Human, which was it just had like a yin yang on the back of it, and I had kind of made it melting. I made it melting into each other, and then the bottom of it all melting, and I had Human on the front and kind of like this Japanese stylistic font. And that was the first actual order that I did for my personal line Human. And I remember I took it to a convention that was selling high-end sneakers and Supreme. And I set up a booth, and I had a few Supreme items myself, and I had a few
Nice.
sneakers, and I put those out on my booth. But then behind me, I just had a massive clothing rack of all the Human shirts, and that's what I was really pushing and trying to sell. And I ended up selling one Human shirt, and it was to a buddy of mine, Alan, who ended up purchasing it. And
First human shirt. Awesome.
the first Human shirt was sold at that point. And I didn't really, some people might have gone to something like that and felt discouraged after only selling one shirt, and they thought, I thought I was going to go there and sell 50 shirts or something. I thought I was going to sell out, right? Not at all. Not at all. But I didn't really feel discouraged. And in fact, it kind of felt more empowered, right? I was like, okay, this can work. This can be something. I can make this into whatever I want to make it into. I know I've done it with my magic career. I know I've done it with my health and my, as a human so far, I can turn this into whatever I want to turn it into. And that was really where the real transition happened. And I was, I might have, this was probably right before I turned 17 when I sold that first Human shirt.
So you got your personal brand since you were 16.
That's
That's
right.
you still have it today. I saw that. So it's what,
I
it's
do.
20 years or something?
No, not quite. I'll be 26 this year, so it's going on 10 years.
Oh, okay, sorry. But anyway, 10 years at that young age, that is amazing, man. Congrats
Thank you.
to that. That's fantastic. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Yeah,
Fantastic.
it's been a journey, and since then I've been able to collaborate with some really unique and cool people. I've been able to sell it inside of stores. I've been able to do fun stuff on the e-commerce world. And I actually started getting some traction from the brand. From that point on, I knew this is what I wanted to do, right? And so I started taking things kind of to the next level. I figured out, Instagram was, I mean, it was around, but the fashion scene and world on Instagram is not what it is today, right? The level of online consumption, especially in the fashion world, was still not full e-commerce yet, but it was building and it was brewing, right? And I ended up just going kind of headfirst into online world, because I realized through originally that Redbubble store, I had more sales from stickers and stuff like that going globally and around the world than people in my hometown that understood what I was doing. Right. So I assumed that, okay, Where I'm from, it's a different type of world. It's a different community. It's not going to be understood and held in the same light as maybe some places that have a larger taste of art. And I started doing what at that today we call it product seeding or PR packages. At that time, I didn't know what it was called or what I was doing, but I would contact managers for musicians or stylists for celebrities and all of this sort of stuff. And I would just say, hey, I look at my brand, look at the products I've made. I'd love to send you something, right? And out of every 100 messages I'd send, I'd probably get 90 people that don't reply. I'd get four people that said, F you. And then I'd get a few people that'd say, yeah, my address, send, in my size, send me something. So I began starting to send out these promo packages, right? Of that would include my new hat or it would include my new shirt or whatever it is. And also around that time, I ended up getting my own sewing machine, and I got my own. At that time, we didn't have, there's a new thing in today's world called DTF, which is like high-end transfers. Back then, we only had vinyl, right? If I wanted to do something at home, I got a US vinyl cutter and I'd get sheets of vinyl from Scissor Vinyl. I'd make my own stuff. I'd got a heat press, and I put all stuff basically into, at that time I was living in an apartment, and I had a bathroom that was just like really long, and my closet was also in the bathroom. I took all the clothes out of the closet, put a t-shirt rack inside of my bedroom in front of my bed, and then I put all of my fashion equipment into the closet. And so I put a desk next to my sink in my
That
bathroom.
makes sense.
I just made my own little workshop, a little assembly line inside of my bathroom. And I'd make all these clothes there. I would contact as many people as I could. I would send them all my designs. And slowly but surely, I started getting, large names wearing the clothes. And around that point in time is when I was able to kind of make the transition locally as well in my hometown to, these people started to understand it because they saw their favorite music artist or they saw their favorite, whatever it is, wearing my stuff. And so they're like, oh, maybe this is
But that's always how it goes. From your hometown, it has to come from somewhere else. But
exactly.
you know what? Before we trace down this collaboration and styling you do, what I found really interesting in the way you talk about it with so much enthusiasm and but it now after you're starting and switching from magic to graphic design now into fashion, but it seems to become more and more intuitively and effortlessly. Because it didn't seem like there's a strategy, it just naturally progressed into I'm dabbling in graphic design, no one gets what the F I'm doing here, so I gotta put it out there into the real world. Oh, stickers work. Let's do a shirt. It's just like it's everything's falling into place, which is always the magic I love about these creative paths. But it, I don't know. Is that my impression? Is that right? That it from that point on was just self-serving, self-running, its course?
Yes, there was no, I didn't build out a business plan. I didn't
Of
have,
course not.
I didn't have a business structure. What I knew was I wanted to make clothes and I wanted cool people to wear my clothes and I wanted it to support me. That's all I knew. And so through my grit and determination and perseverance, it was just, how can I do that? Okay, I've done this. What's next? Okay, I've done this. What's next? Okay, I did this. I learned from this one. How can I imply that into the next thing? Okay, great. That worked or that didn't work. What's next?
Yeah,
Right? It was
100%.
always there. It was basically an evolution, right? It's just building on top of one another, the compound effect, right? And just staying day in and day out. This is what I do. This is who I am. This is unauthentically me, right? Well, you're either going to love it or you're going to hate it. And I don't really care because I'm not, this is what I'm doing, right? There will be somebody out there that loves it.
That's the mindset,
Exactly. And just kind of, things, the magic of things did happen. Things did miraculously at times fall into place. Or, I ended up one day, I was watching a music video with one of my friends at that time who was also, helping me out with the brand and stuff. And we're sitting there watching it. And then all of a sudden, and I'm not really paying attention. And then all of a sudden, I hear my friend start freaking out. He's like, "Oh my, Miller, rewind it, rewind it, rewind it." He's freaking out. I'm like, "What? What?" I rewind it, and the music artist, his name's Trippie Redd. Trippie Redd is wearing my shorts in the middle of the music video.
Awesome.
And I knew I was ecstatic. I started freaking out. We're both looking at each other like, what's going, how's this happening?
Fantastic.
And that was one of the, that was a core memory that's kind of been ingrained in my mind of just like seeing, and I probably sent those shorts to one of Trippie Redd's friends 6 months ago, never saw anything of it. And it's just like a full circle moment where it's like, oh, this thing is working.
Fantastic.
And it's been a journey, but yeah, it's been
So cool.
enjoyable.
So, I mean, today, if I got that right, what you do today with your brand Human is also you collaborate with artists, right? And you work with big names, and I'm really interested if you work on these collaborations. I'm interested, how does that creative partnership maybe look like? And also, how does the style and the voice of the artist inspire their collaboration? Is it like, hey, I think my style fits theirs? Or is it like more of an openness? Today it's Action Bronson, tomorrow it's a death metal band. I don't know. Does this play a role in your process?
Yeah, so actually, Mark, there's two sides to that. And there's actually two things that I do. So there's one side, which is the human side, which is still the brand, and I do collaborations with the brand, right? And I've actually ended up transforming that whole concept into basically another business. That I call Limitless. And we basically provide a full brand incubator, accelerator, and startup program for a lot of very big names. So I'll first tackle the human side. So the human side of things, normally when I do these collaborations and stuff like that, I'm the one that's seeking similar and alike brands or things that I aspire to work with, or brands that I aspire to be with, or want my name shared with and whatnot. So normally it is me pitching, if you will, right? Finding something that I think is cool, coming up with a creative capsule, and just, weaseling my way in there. Kind of like what I did to begin with when I was sending those PR packages, but now just at a little different level, right? Now instead of just sending you a t-shirt, I'm saying, let's make a t-shirt together, right? Oh, hey, I understand. You don't have time? No problem. What do you think about this? I already designed it. I've put, your design elements over here. Does this speak your language? Yes or no? If I can get a response at that point, I know I can start getting some traction, right? Okay, no, it doesn't. Well, what about this? And what about this? And what about this? Right? And beginning to build that relationship there. And that's kind of how I've done it on the human side. Now, the limitless side, which is more of a, it doesn't, it's not full collaborations with my brand and their brand. What it is we're actually building a brand on their behalf or with them, helping them scale and grow their brand. So through running Human, and getting out to Los Angeles and being able to do some of these styling things and stuff like that with cool names and stuff like that, people started to kind of realize, a lot of the people that I was styling started to realize, hey, you're just styling us in your clothes. A traditional stylist is going to go, they don't really have their own brand. They're probably going to go get 20 different brands and give them all the options. No, when I show up, I've got my options and they're my clothes, right? And these guys started catching on to that. And they were like, okay, well, you have a really cool brand. You make really cool stuff. Can you help me make my own brand, make my own stuff? And that's where the limitless idea spawned, where we originally, it started very small. It started with some niche people and, oh, I'm this guy's DJ. I'm the DJ for this famous person or whatever. And that was the original person I was sending human clothes to. And now they're coming to me saying, hey, I want to start a hat company. Hey, I want to start a t-shirt, right? Can you help me put this together? And it was a slow start at first, but being able to have that relentless hustle and already know that the communication game and stuff like that through human, we were able to kind of find our footing and again weasel our way into rooms or studios or just communities that. If you look back on it, we didn't belong in those places, but somehow we got in. And since we were able to get in, we were going to make something happen from there. Right.
Magic,
And make some magic happen. And basically, that's kind of how that whole route started. And we got, you mentioned the name Action Bronson. That was the one of the first big artists that we had ended up actually kind of putting all the pieces in place and helping with the manufacturing of his products and doing the fulfillment of the products. And at that point, when we first started, it was simply just manufacturing, right? I was really good at making the clothes for human. I could leverage the same teams that I was having make my clothes and my already pre-existing knowledge in the fashion industry to take your idea. You tell me your idea. I understand it. I can conceptualize it to the factory and to the teams. I've got the factories and teams. We can build it. And because I'm doing it, I'm going to add a couple bucks to it. Right? That's kind of how it started. And then from there, it was okay, well, if we're making the clothes, we should also ship the clothes. Okay, well, if we're making the clothes and we're shipping the clothes, what if somebody comes to us and they don't have a design? Well, okay, well, I know graphic design. I can do the graphic design. Oh, okay, we're doing the design, we're making the clothes, we're shipping the clothes. Well, what about website? Well, we've built our own Shopify stores and our own websites for
Sure.
e-commerce. Hey, well, now do your websites. Okay, well, if we're doing all these things, and these guys are getting, we're shipping thousands or hundreds of units. It's a lot higher demand for the stuff than, my personal brand's couple hundred pieces here, a couple hundred pieces there. You're probably going to start getting some customer service emails. How about I start providing customer service emails? Okay. Well, we're kind of doing the design, we're making the clothes, we're making the website, we're fulfilling it all, we're doing the customer service. Well, what if I start providing the product photography? Okay. Now, what if I start providing the content creation? Right. And so, just one thing again, similar to kind of how the evolution of going from magic to design and into fashion kind of happened. It was
Fantastic.
just a compounding snowball that allowed us to kind of build out limitless into being just like a, we like to think of ourselves as like an all-in-one, just, you want to build a brand? We can build your brand,
That's
right?
what
Take
it sounds like. Fantastic.
No, that's been the journey.
Awesome. Miller, take us a little bit as far as you're comfortable with on the business side of things. So how does that look? I mean, today that you're up and running with Limitless, how do you pick collaborators? Do they need to have a certain reach, a certain gravitational pull towards them? So you know you're gonna, I don't know, sell like X items. And how do you work with those people? Are you part of the deal? Are you service provider.
So that's a good question, Mark. There's a few different styles that we do. And actually, it's been my job this week and last week to come up with restructuring all these styles, or at
Fantastic,
least
yeah.
offers, right? We've always been very reactive. And what I mean by that is, at first, we would eat what we could kill, for lack of better terms. It didn't matter who you were, how large you were, what you did, right? If you needed manufacturing help, cool, we'll make your product. If you needed whatever it was, we have the systems to be able to plug and play. But that was very reactive. Mark, you'd come to me and say, I want 50 t-shirts. This is my budget. This is my logo. What can I do? And then we'd do it, right? But Mark, you might take those shirts and, it might not be the best experience for you. And it might not, the shirts might not be the greatest and the prints might not be the best, right? All of these things. And so recently, these last couple of weeks, and I'll tread back a little bit actually. We were reactive for about 4 years of running this business, right? Anybody that would come into us, right, we would just be able, they'd tell us what they need. We would either one, make a scope of work that has a contractual agreement in it that says, okay, we think that you're going to be able to sell a lot of units because you're kind of big and famous and you know all these people. Let's do a profit share. And we'll just provide you everything and we'll give you the world. And, assuming that you sell all these units, we'll just take a little cut. And then, we did that and it works great for a few people, but some people, it doesn't work great for. They have no desire to do the marketing or to push the product or anything like that. So now my team is kind of left. I still have to pay all the wages. I still have to pay all the salaries. I still have to all the assets, right? All that sort of stuff. And if I don't get the it right, so it can make it challenging on my team. Then we had the other side that was, you come to us, you tell us what you want to make, we'll make it. I'll add a couple bucks here or there so that way we could make our margin on it. I could pay our team. I could, make a couple bucks profit on this thing, and everybody's happy. It's a win-win. But in fashion, there's so many variables from, this coat here alone, there's a million plus different ways I can make this coat. There's 1,000 different fabrics I can use for the outer fabric. There's 1,000 different fabrics I can use for the inside. There's 100 different zippers I could use. There's 50 different trim options. The ribbing on the wrist here, there's 100 different ribs I can use, right? All of it. There's so many different variables. And so these last couple of weeks, I started kind of running through everything and just kind of looking at everything from the admin eye in the business. And I was like, okay, what are things that I could do to kind of help streamline this stuff and be able to provide a better experience for the end consumer or for our consumer, and for my team? And that's been kind of structuring different packages. And now I've got a package that's like the brand starter kit. It comes with, it gives you the exact deliverables that it comes with. We are going to use our expert opinion to tell you how we should deliver those to you and what the garments are and all of that sort of stuff. We then have like the launch pad, which comes with a full suite of stuff. We'll build your website, we'll build your product development, we'll do your graphic design, we'll do your samples, we'll do your product photography, we'll get you every step of the way ready to launch. And once you want to launch, you're good to launch. We still offer the custom orders, right, where people can just say, hey, Miller, I want this with this logo, make it happen. And then on that kind of higher level, more hands-on side where we're working with some like big creators or artists and stuff like that, it's always kind of been this way, but we're really framing it this way now where it's kind of an invite only sort of deal, right? I need to have faith in it. Our team needs to have faith in it. You have to have faith in us. And it really needs to be more of a hands-on, intimate experience. And if I just open that to the masses, I wouldn't be able to give it that
Wouldn't be the
hands-on.
same.
Right. And so collaborating on that level has been, it's very difficult, right? There's a lot of people I want to work with that I don't work with, right? It's very hard to get to some of these people, but it's been a uphill battle, to say the least. It's been growing and it's been phenomenal, and we're super pleased, thrilled, and happy with it.
But it's tough.
But it's
But
tough.
it's tough, man.
Tough.
And I really want to point out to everyone listening, because what you described is a very crucial, deep cut strategy decision, which is not easy. And especially the route you're taking, which I admire, taking it boutique, making it special, following your passion, going in to passion projects, providing the quality and depth of creative work that you want to do. But that's not the main road, you know? You're taking the uphill, weird way. Has anyone ever went there? I don't know. There's kind of tracks. It's not really tracks. We have four-wheel drive, you know, all that stuff.
Right.
Because the quote-unquote easier thing, or the more explored road to go down, would be, okay, how do we make it for a mass market? How do we less customization,
Yeah.
more mass fitting, hire more people, focus on your CEO role, whatever, but you want to stay involved. And this is what I love when I talk to creative entrepreneurs, because they are taking the sometimes much harder road to follow their passion, you know, and that's what's happening here. And I really want to underline this for everyone listening. This is a very interesting strategic choice you made. So kudos, really cool.
And thank you for recognizing that too, Mark. That's there's one side where I have to be a adapt business person, right? But there's the other side that I have to do what I love and what I'm passionate about. Otherwise, I won't want to do this,
Of
right?
course, yeah.
And it's really finding that balance and that blend. And yes, taking the more boutique, hands-on approach is not it is the road less traveled, right? But oh, is it Shel Silverstein? I took the road less traveled, and that made all the difference.
100%.
Right. That's the goal. That's the mindset, and that's the focus currently.
So, but I want to focus on you for a second. You just dropped the word balance, and I'm really curious. Again, having talked to a lot of creative entrepreneurs, how do you balance your roles between finance guy, strategy guy, and still being the artist? Some life hacks for the rest of us.
All right. So there's a few things there. I have a dream, right? And I've made a plan, and my job now is to work the plan. There are times where I have to play many roles because I don't have, I'm not a VC funded guy. I'm not a, right? I don't have the largest team. There's like seven of us. If you count a fractional employee, there's eight of us, right? And we are dealing with very top level business stuff. I'm dealing with record labels and management groups and large businesses and companies that we're doing this for. And so I have to be a jack of all trade, and I have to adapt every day, basically, right? From doing what we're doing here, Mark. And then right before this, I was going through emails for a basically a billionaire invitational event that's going to be happening in the start of next month. And I had to be having phone calls with all of those folks and figuring out the structure that we're making all the product for it and the event rollout. And then after this, Mark, I have to jump onto a production meeting. And then yesterday was tax day. So I had to file all
Ooh,
this is
tax
tax
day.
and pay all of our taxes. And then Friday's payroll. And I have to make payroll work. It is so I say all this. It is not easy. It's not there are times where the task itself is not fun, right? But if you look at the task versus you look at the what we're doing, what we're building, and what we are, that is fun. And there are things that are inside of that that aren't fun, that just have to get done.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And the balance of it is, you know, quite frankly, I will start my day and do the things that I don't want to do the most.
That's
it sucks.
That's an interesting creative routine. Yeah. I get it.
It
yeah.
sucks, but it'll allow me to end up freeing. I can end my day normally on a high because I'm doing the things at the end of the day that I want to do.
Yeah.
And I start my day with the things that, you know, just have to get done, that I know are going to suck to get done, that, you know, I just got to get it in there and get it, you know, and just do it. And I start very early most days and I end late most days. Yeah. Right. And it's for creative entrepreneurs that are also working a 9 to 5, right? And stuff like that. I was well in that position before Limitless really was able to get its growth and stuff like that. It's not the 5 to 9 that's killing, or it's not the 9 to 5 that's killing your goals. It's the 5 to 9, right? It's what you're doing after that. If you're just coming back and you're crashing and you're sitting on the couch and you're just hanging out and you're not following those goals, it's that's what's doing the damage. And it's not the fact that you have to have a 9 to 5 to be able to support your life. So that way, you know, you should take that support for your life to then go follow your passion project from the 5 to 9.
You know? I mean, that's also part of the natural selection process, I guess. If you want to take your 5 to 9 and you just, for whatever reason, don't, it's not strong enough to pull.
Yeah.
Fuck, man, enjoy life. Don't enjoy do life. The hustle. It can be fine. Yeah.
No,
you know, but what you're describing is the, okay, I'm going to butcher that quote, is the, he who knows his why can handle anyhow, something like that.
Okay.
Something like that. But that's what it reminds me of. And, you know what? It's interesting that you said that, because I was trying for years to find my rhythm in terms of, when do I get the whip and when do I get the carrot? Do I start with the stuff I really hate to get it out of the way and then dive in, which sometimes can happen. You have so much shit on your table that you don't get to the stuff you love, bad day. Or do you can't wait to go into the office, studio, wherever, because you start with something fun. And I try this all the time. And what really, for me personally, I do the same you do. I start with the stuff I don't like. Because I talked to a musician, he's a friend of mine, and he's a musician, and he's recording albums and he's really doing it. And he says, you know, when he goes into the studio to record an album, he always keeps like 3 to 4 to 5 tracks up his sleeve, stay in the magic symbolism here. Because when the album is finished and the tour is finished, he doesn't have to start from scratch. He doesn't start on the blank page. He knows, oh, I have these 3 tracks I really like. And these are tracks he would love to have on the album, but he doesn't put them on there. It's like, hey, this is my investment in the future creative bank. So when I get out of this hustle, I have 3 started songs that I'm really looking forward to. I actually can't wait to do them.
So
this kind of informed my decision. For now, it can always change, but I also start with the stuff I have to do and then end up with the stuff I like to do because I never get finished. So tomorrow morning, I know
you have
today,
to do
midday in the evening latest, I can work on stuff I really look forward to. So yeah, it's my 2 cents.
that's absolutely, and that's a brilliant thing that musicians do. A lot of people, they'll end their tours or they'll end their album sessions and just... Yeah. You know, almost maybe like mentally check out and crash for a little bit.
Yeah.
But if you're able to leave one of those two, you know, a few things up your sleeve, you're able to go and actually record those things.
Yeah.
And those will just, that'll snowball into the net. You know, here's the next
right?
Album.
Right.
The
net.
That's brilliant. That's really
be
good.
Be a freaking pirate about your ideas. Yeah. That's what I took away from them.
Yeah.
And you know what, as we just talked about the business stuff, what I wondered when I read about your brand, which I really like human, but from the very boring business side, how did you work in terms of copyright for that brand? Because the word human, you can't copyright this, can you?
So no, human itself is not copyrighted, but I have a logo mark. And
Oh
this
yeah.
is copyrighted.
That's an iconic
this is
logo.
great. Thank you. Yes.
Iconic.
It's similar to the Anarchy logo, and we've just replaced the A with the H, and we've made it actually clean. And so that logo itself is trademarked, and I own that logo strike. But the name Human, no, I do not own the direct copyright. You probably nobody owns the direct
Yeah,
copyright,
sure.
right? And so it is as often as possible getting that logo strike seen in the same time where if you see any of the human clothes, right? So that way you can eventually start making the
Sure.
mental switch to if you see that logo, you know it's human.
Perfect. Little, but I mean, still for all the sweet people listening on the beginning of the journey, that's a huge question. What if I
Yeah.
want to name my brand with a name like that? How do I save that? How can I work with that, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So always, yeah, have a, you should always have a text-based logo. You should have a symbol logo or like an icon logo. And whenever you are able to, when it doesn't affect with like your design language or your brand language, two should be shown together or in the same landscape when possible. So that's my two cents on that.
That's perfect. Cool. I wanna leave the business side a little bit and go into your creative
Yeah.
approach and everything. You just said it beautifully. You said, I have a dream, I made it a plan, and now I'm working on it.
Yeah.
So is there any way you can, well, I guess getting rich is not the big dream. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but can you share with us how you manifest the dream? You don't have to say word for word if that's too personal, but I sense a lot of people have very different ways to visualize or force their dream into
Yeah.
becoming real, you know? So maybe you can share your strategy for that.
So I'll start by saying you can only fail if you quit. That's what I'll first start by saying, right? As long as you are still trying to get to your dream, you have not failed, right? And yes, you're going to have times where something doesn't go your way, and at that point, that task or whatever might have felt like a failure, right? But you have not failed, right? And so, as long as you're trying and you're working towards it, you're still doing it. You're still chasing and chasing, you know, and living the, working on living the dream, right? So that's what I'll start with, and then going into it, so. Yes, manifesting carries a level of weight, but people need to understand and realize if all you do for your manifesting is you wake up in the morning and you look in the mirror and you say your mantra and you do five, 10, you say these five, 10 things, and then you go on about your life. Well, that stuff's probably not going to come true. It now, on the contrary, if you wake up, you go in the mirror, or you close your eyes, or whatever it is, right? You visualize, right? You visualize yourself being in the position you want to be, doing the things that you want to do, living the life that you want to live, and then you think for just you do that for a second, and then you think, okay, what can I do today that can help get me one step closer to that goal, right? And it can be a very basic thing, right? Now, a part of my dream is with my health stuff is I want to be very, very healthy, right? So all I need to do is if I know I go for a walk or a run or I go to the gym, that is one thing that I'm doing that's working itself to towards my dream. Have to work the dream. If you just dream it, that's a beautiful thing. But then you need to make a plan for the dream and you need to actually work it. right? So, right, there's, I want to be able to work with some of the largest names in the music space. That's not enough. If I just do that, that's not enough. Okay, what can I do today that can get me one step closer? Well, I have LinkedIn, I have Instagram, I have YouTube. How about I do a little research on finding the people that I want to work with and finding their networks? And how about I contact? But they'll probably never see it, but what if they do? Right? What if they do? Let me DM or shoot a LinkedIn message or whatever. Let me do outreach. And if I do that towards 25 people today, that gives me 25 shots on goal. That will, they'll probably not score, right? But if I do that again tomorrow, and I do that again tomorrow, and I do that again tomorrow, I can compound these numbers until I get one goal. And if I get one goal, well, that's a win, right? I'm working the dream. I'm following the dream or following the plan. And then I can take that one goal. And if I do a very good job for that one goal, on that one goal, and I actually get a shot at the project and I do the project and I complete, and I do a very good job at that project. Hey there, I'm so thankful for the opportunity. I'm so glad that we were able to work together. Do you have anybody else in your network that, I could provide this work for? And if I did a good job, right, they'll take my referral and they'll actually go refer me, and then. And if I'm doing that as I'm compounding on sending out outreach messages and I'm continuously thinking about these things, right? So it's, you still have to do the work to be able to make your manifest, to be able to make your dreams come true. To the common person, it might just look like I'm pulling some of this stuff out of thin air, like it's really magic. And Mark, that there, some of it might be magic. It might just be divine timing that this person happened to check their messages or send my email or whatever. But if I never sent that email, and if I didn't send the 50 emails before, and if I didn't make the 100 phone calls before that, it would have never happened. So it's a little bit of a blend of both, right? And the visualizing is important because you have to have that dream to be able to know where you want to go. And then it's knowing where you want to go, reverse engineering that to, okay, what are the one, what are the 10 things, the million things, the steps that I have to do to get me there? And am I able to, can I cross to, can I take a step there every day or every week or every month or right? Like, and building that out into being a tangible plan that can at least, you can at least give it a real try. That's what I have to say on that part there.
I really like it. I really like it.
Thank you.
Miller, there's not much left to ask. We're talking for 90 minutes already, nearly. So I have two
Oh.
questions I ask all my guests towards the end of the show. First question is always, if you want to share something that has inspired you over the last days or weeks, can be a book, show, a podcast, a movie, whatever it is, a conversation you had, is there something you want to share with us that inspired you?
Yeah, there's actually a new show. I believe it's on Apple TV. It's called The Studio, and it's with Seth Rogen, and it's a comedy. I'm a sucker for comedies, but it's all about the movie and film industry and like the behind the scenes. It's a show about how they. It's a comedy show about how they make these movies and all the drama that happens inside of the studio. And, they put Seth Rogen in as just like the, he becomes the, like the president of the studio. And, he has to make all the decisions, but seeing, and I'm not really drawing inspiration on a business level necessarily from it, but from a creativity level and from a, the artistic approach that they've been able to take in the show and just exposing that side of the industry that, like, I'm sure all of us, if we really thought hard about it, we could probably figure, think about these things, but being able to get to see it in the way that they're able to quit is It's a little mind-blowing to me, and it is hilarious, and it's making a part of me one day hope that I can have something in the film industry and just be a part of that a little bit. And I've been watching that for like the last, I think I'm on episode 3 or 4, but they're coming out once a week. So it,
Fantastic. I heard good things about it actually. And you know what? It doesn't surprise me that you're watching that because I heard an interview with Seth Rogen about it, and he talks about this key struggle of the creative entrepreneur. If you love films and you get into the role of producing them, and that's tricky because you now have to focus on the business side of the creative industry, which you actually love for the creativity. So I think it fits very well into the cosmos of our conversation here. Great
that's,
recommendation. Thank
I
you.
didn't, yeah. And thank you for putting that into my perspective.
Cool.
I think that is spot on.
So, you know what? Last question is, what can we look forward to? I saw some coming soon things on your website. Take your time and pitch something for us. What can we look out for?
Human, the personal brand, we're going to be doing a release around the fall time. It's called Corn Fed Number 2, or Corn Fed Capsule 2. As being a kid from Iowa, we are farm grown, and we are the number one growers of corn. And so it's a lot of touching the roots. I've got a kind of elevated Western capsule that I'm working on developing for it. And I'm putting on a I'm basically doing an exhibit in Iowa where I'm renting out a farm field. And that logo that you saw, we are basically making a crop circle into the farm field of the logo. And it's a interactive art gallery that I will have 12 models inside of the crop circle. And I'm building little nativity scenes. That each model will be wearing one of the new outfits from the collection inside of the nativity scene, paying kind of homage back to the Midwest and back to the farm culture and all that sort of stuff. And then we're going to be doing a large activation for it that will be across the United States. It'll take place all within 24 hours, and it will be very loud, and hey, I can't say very much about it,
All right.
but if you see it, it's going to cause some commotion, to say the
Wow,
least.
nice. Now that's an announcement. I like that.
Well, thank
Fantastic.
you. Yeah, that's a big thing on my docket, so I'm excited for it.
Love it. We will revisit that, and I'll share whenever I see something in the fall.
Beautiful.
Fantastic,
Thank
man.
you, Martin.
Miller, with all that being said, thank you so much for sharing your journey, your insight, your creative spirit. I'm pretty sure this episode was great for everyone who's working creatively, who's thinking about should I take this step, should I start something. It's really inspiring. Thank you so much for being a guest.
Thank you, Mark.
What a journey. Sweet people, thanks for tuning in and following the conversation between Miller McCoy and me. I really appreciated him being on because, again, his story reminded me that brand building isn't just about products. It's about purpose, it's about perseverance, and it's about the people you bring along the way. So whether you're launching your first drop or scaling a full-fledged fashion business, so to speak, Miller stories remind me that mindset and story are as important as margins and merch, so to speak. Three biggest takeaways for me in this conversation were: start where you are, can be in your basement, can be just an idea, trust the process and follow it through. The second one would be let your story shape your brand. This is crucial, this is important, and could be talents you bring to the table, it can be your potential flaws that you turn into strength within your brand. Let your story shape your brand. There's no story like it. And last but not least, I was really impressed And I mentioned this in the interview already by the strategic choices Miller shared with us when it comes to scaling his company and not looking for the biggest possible revenue, but to build a boutique brand that fits his vision, his approach on the brand he really wants to build. So thanks for tuning into the Sweet Spot Podcast. I'm going to go on and explore more stories behind strategy people and their brands. If you enjoyed this conversation with Miller, share it with someone who's building their own brand, forging their own creative path. And of course, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and follow us for more conversations with creatives, thinkers, makers, and brand builders of today. Sweet people, that's it for this week. Stay curious, keep finding your sweet spot, and I hear you on the other side.
This podcast is produced by Sweet Spot Studio. New episodes each week, wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you enjoyed the show, leave a rating and subscribe to never miss an episode. Find out more at sweetspot-studio.com.